Hi there, you. It's me again with one of our Culturefile digital singles, this time coming from a raw space in Galway. Tulca Festival of Visual Arts 2025, which currently spreads out over many venues in the city under the title Strange Land Still Bear Common Ground, has a couple of striking distinctions over previous outings, key among which is having a theme song. The multi-venue event, which includes exhibitions, performances, radio and online components, is curated this year by Bueller Zogo, an artist and curator responsible for, among other things, Erin and I, a black migrant archive. Bueller Zogo showed Culturefile around the venue's central exhibition at the auspiciously empty Heinz building near the docks, where she's installed works such as the immense quilts of Jessica Zamora Turner and similarly epic scale coins by local artist Shauna Reardon.
My name is Bueller Zogo. I am the curator for Tulca 2025, which is called Strange Land Still Bear Common Ground. Right now we are in the Heinz building in Galway City Centre, and this is the Tulca Gallery, so it's the main gallery for this edition of Tulca. There's also some other galleries too dotted throughout the city, so that includes 126 Artist Friend Space, the Galway Arts Centre, the University Gallery and the Zoology Museum and James Mitchell Geology Museum as well.
Notably there isn't the print works that was used in previous exhibitions, and actually sort of for several different exhibitions in Galway.
I think finding the main space is a challenge each year for the curator and also the Tulca team, because there is sort of a lack of permanent art venues or art spaces that are built for purpose in the city. So this year we've ended up in the Heinz building. Last year it was the Printworks, and I think it changes every year and probably will continue to.
We're in a big space, and it's one of those standard pieces of architecture where a kind of grid of columns and beams and concrete and iron beams form a sort of grid in the gallery space, and it's quite open, but it's a little bit like you might find in an office or indeed an underground car park. That's basically the style. The style is very functional.
Yeah, that's right. And as you're speaking, your voice is kind of echoing off all of these walls. A really nice feature, I think, of the space is the windows. So there's sort of a wall of windows, and it's got that kind of corporate effect where you can see out, so you can see people passing, but it's very hard to see in. So people have to kind of peer to figure out what's going on and why all of these sort of large scale structures are here and what they are.
It's a metaphor for art in general.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So the first thing the thing we're nearest to is what looks like a large scale coin. But when I say large scale, it's toddler height.
Yes, it's a toddler height coin, and there's actually two of them. So this is called Good for All Night, and the other coin is called Fool. So they're sitting, they're freestanding, and they're kind of positioned as if they might move or roll away. And you can tell they're coins because they've got the sort of like gridded outline and they're completely round. And these are two sculptures by the artist Shauna Reardon. And Shauna's a Galway-based artist who works in sculpture. And these two coins are very interesting because they've got quite funny motifs on them. So the first one we're looking at has sort of like theatre frowning mask face with some stars that I think would be reminiscent of the European flag. And behind the coin, it says Good for All Night. So it kind of uses the aesthetics of, I guess, currency that we're used to looking at, but it's got these sort of parody, kind of cheeky elements to it as well. And within Sean's work, they've been thinking quite a lot about access and entry. And this work is inspired by some research that they'd done about these tokens that gay men in the 80s or queer people in the 80s used to use to access like exclusive spaces like clubs and bathhouses and bars. And in that, Sean was sort of thinking about all of these secret economies, like economies of desire that we might not consider, and these processes of kind of connection and exchange and movement and value that are determined by currency.
Our strange land still bear common ground, for the way hills gleam.
I've actually heard the title in one piece from the show, which is an audio piece, because there is also an online element of the show. And the title of the show is sung.
Taking a single step as adequate to the ground.
Yeah, so that was really special. That's come from a collaboration between two artists, Anya Moore and Kate O'Shea, who are in Australia at the moment and have been doing some research called A Collection of Ocean Waifs about a newspaper published by Irish political prisoners.
How strange land still bear common ground.
Who were sent to Wallyoop, which is Fremantle in Western Australia. And Annie and Kate from Australia have collaborated with some artists and researchers here in Ireland, including Porrig Stevens, as well as some researchers in Australia, including Ron Bradfield Jr. They've made this beautiful work around the newspaper, and that's where the song came from. So the song came after the exhibition title. And yeah, when I heard it for the first time, it was just really brilliant, because I wasn't expecting Tolka to have its own sort of theme theme music.
May the Lord rise up to greet you, the wind be in your back, how strange land still bear common ground.
The themes for this year's Tolka kind of started with, as like most years do, engaging with Galway as a specific site for the festival and Galway's history. I was really interested in Galway's sort of maritime history and its position by the sea, sort of thinking about modes of like exchange that have happened here historically. I was really engaging with Bob Quinn's idea of the Atlantean Irish and sort of thinking about this image of Irishness or Irish identity that has actually been influenced by exchanges with North African people and Mediterranean people, and how even acknowledging that can be really contested when people kind of configure Irishness as only rooted in sort of Celtic heritage. So that was really interesting to me, specifically here with Galway as a location. And from there, just thinking about processes of exchange, I started thinking about these modes of discovery. And I just kind of happened upon this map online. It was an image of a Burmese map of the world. I believe it's a medieval map, but it's a really, really gorgeous image. It's sort of the world in this map is a sort of egg-shaped landmass. And it's very gorgeous. At the very top of the map, there's a sort of tree of life. And in the middle of the map is a mountain range, which is the Himalayas. And then at the very bottom of the map, the egg sort of cracks. So all of these pieces of land are kind of falling away from the main landmass. And they become these tiny little islands. And within the caption, it basically says, these islands are where strangers come from. I think there's something really interesting about that caption, about kind of positioning encountering strangeness or strangers as an inevitable part of being in the world or living in the world or discovering or even knowing yourself and your position in the world. So this kind of idea of strangers and strangeness is where the title of the exhibition came from, and the sort of possibility that comes from that sort of exchange with what feels unfamiliar or what feels other. There's quite a lot there. So sort of thinking about what a strange land or what a common land is and how that sort of changes depending on who's speaking. There's no like objective strangeness or objective commonality. What's strange to you might not be strange to the next person. And I think it just kind of maybe encourages you to think about what exists in your periphery or what exists on the margins.
There's two more kind of hanging pieces here, tapestries or quilts.
Yeah, so there's actually three if we stand back.
There's another one, yes, sorry.
Yeah.
It's just smaller than the others.
Yes, the technicians were calling them the daddy, the mommy, and the baby. but yeah, maybe let's start with the baby quilt.
They're in quite muted colours, what I would say kind of like skin tones of various types.
Yes, exactly. So they're sort of skin tones or even earth tones. So these are three handmade, what's the word?
Quilt? No, not quilt. What is the word? I'm not sure.
Textile.
Textile, is that what you're... But it's like a stuffed thing, you know, like a
yes.
quilt that you put on your bed as well, but it's not. It's not a functional... What does the artist call them?
Well, I think she would call it a quilt, but I guess here, I mean... we would call it a textile sculpture if we were going to use the some art speak, but it is definitely a quilt. You can see it's got like little patchworks, and it's made of sort of salvage fabrics, and it's also made of an antique blouse, so you can see some of the mesh and the floral effect. The first quilt we're looking at is called The Three Sisters. So like you said, looking closely, you can see it's kind of stuffed. So from the sides, you can see little bits of untreated wool sort of curling and poking out of it. And then if you get really close to it, you might be able to see that within the quilt itself, there are these little pockets where there's some heirloom seeds that have been stitched in.
I can just sort of see through the semi-transparent material that there are a few quite large seeds kind of sewn into one of the pockets there.
That's right. So the clue's in the name. So it's called The Three Sisters, and there are three types of seeds. So there is beans, squash, and corn. And these are three of the main crops that you would find in the Americas. And The Three Sisters is also a traditional seed planting method that I guess indigenous groups would have used in the Americas, where those three seeds are planted together. And then as they grow, they sort of grow together and they sustain each other and they uphold each other as they push through the soil. I think within it, she's sort of attempting to challenge the sort of monocultural, industrial, agricultural logic where seeds are planted by themselves, and in doing so kind of, I guess, leach the soil, and also, I guess, it has a negative effect on biodiversity when you've got these single seeds that are planted by themselves. So within this work, she's looking to challenge the kind of industrial agricultural logic that sees single plants planted by themselves. And she's hoping to return maize and beans and squash to their relational context by bringing them together again. And obviously, these seeds have quite a huge history in America as well. So part of what this work does is kind of represent these displaced communities that were moved away or extracted from their land, and the seeds that they took with them, and how those seeds kind of formed a type of, symbolized a type of sovereignty and ancestral memory as well. So this is sort of, I guess, a monument that honors that history too.
And I guess the form of the quilt is also about a sort of social transmission of the skill.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think it's very beautiful. You can kind of see how gently she's sewn the seeds in. So they've been placed within, like I said, this really beautiful mesh white blouse. So you can see little details of the blouse and how the seeds have kind of been incorporated into them, like down here. Yeah, should we move on to the big quilt? So this quilt is called Pisagua Blanket. It's quite large, it's very big, so we have to kind of turn our heads upwards. it's hung from the ceiling and it almost touches the floor. And similar to The Three Sisters, this has been stuffed with untreated wool, so it has a really distinct smell.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's kind of like...
What are you smelling?
I guess it smells like a farm. So you can see the wool is sort of protruding and poking out from the bottom. And there's little bits of hay as well tucked into this quilt too. So Pisagua Blanket is named after a village in Chile. So Pisagua is a small and remote coastal village in Chile. I think it's got a very small population of about 300 people, mostly fishermen. And the village is really interesting because it kind of forms a natural sort of prison, is how people would describe it. So on one side of it is the ocean, and on the other side of it is the desert. And previously in the past, the village was used as a kind of concentration camp. So during Pinochet's dictatorship in Chile, a lot of political prisoners would have been abducted and kidnapped and sent to Pisagua and tortured there. And yeah, it's quite a sad history, I think, to this day. The national body hasn't really acknowledged any of that. And I think people are still finding lots of bodies and graves in the village too. So this is quite a personal work. So in, I think, 1973, the artist, her father was abducted and sent to Pisagua. And he was tortured there before he was then exiled to Europe. And although the artist has never been, she sort of made this quilt that acts kind of like a soft monument to that history and that ancestral memory as well. And you can kind of see from the size of it how much work and time would have gone into making this quilt. So I think for her that sort of speaks to that kind of time-intensive, slow, reparative work that comes with grief and comes with remembering as well. It's really beautiful to look at. I'm getting lost in the all of the fabrics. It's a really nice, would you call that a pink color? It's like a salmon-y, patchwork-y, saltstone pink.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Tell us a little bit about your own journey into art.
I've got a social science background, so I studied social science and politics at UCD. And while studying, I worked at the Science Gallery in Dublin, which is now gone, but I worked there for a few years. And that was a really interesting, super wonderful space, lots of focus on exhibition mediation to audiences. Each of the exhibitions kind of aimed to marry science and art together. So I think by starting there, I sort of got a really strong interest for art and cultural work, but also from a kind of interdisciplinary lens, or bringing in other disciplines and bringing in other ways of thinking. Working as a mediator, I became quite interested in how to frame work in a way that feels inviting and feels easy to understand and accessible, and also how to kind of locate all of these big ideas in, I guess, everyone's actual lives, and how to talk about things using different cultural frameworks as well.
In your own practice, you kind of have been developing archives, like with Erin and I, for instance.
I have. So, yeah, the archive feels quite like a big part of my practice. I guess a lot of my interests kind of maybe revolve around national identities. So thinking about how identities form. So I'm from Nigeria and I grew up in Ireland, and these two countries have very strong post-colonial identities on the world stage. They also have really significant and related colonial histories. So kind of from thinking about sort of how we might configure ourselves as Nigerian people in the diaspora or as Irish people, how that relates to everything and how that is kind of rooted in certain specific colonial histories that still perpetuate themselves today. And also what we might do with that knowledge as well. It feels like the archive is a very important place to start when thinking about where we go from where we are. So my practice kind of began with developing these archives. So Erin and I, you mentioned, is a Black migrant archive. So that was developed by myself and Giselle Ntumba, who is a friend of mine and also from Galway, actually. So Giselle and I had very similar experiences growing up in the direct provision asylum system here in Ireland. And we kind of connected and bonded through a lot of the memories that come with that, but also quite a lot of thinking about Irish cultural memory, Irish attitudes to asylum seekers, and the sort of like records and documentation that emerges when speaking about people in the asylum system or people of colour in Ireland. So yeah, we created this archive where they didn't exist, where an institutional repository for migrant stories didn't exist. We kind of sought to fill that space, and the project actually from there developed into more of like an arts-based migrant memory platform, because that is kind of, that became, art became kind of the most accessible way for people to talk about really difficult or like traumatizing migration experiences.
And your work kind of continued through various types of occurrences, which were gatherings or meetings or workshops. That's like quite core to your practice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this ties to sort of the interest in research as well. I guess where a research practice allows you to kind of form a sort of closer relationship to an idea, you can do that in isolation. So these places where we're able to actually gather and speak to people and kind of gauge deeply and collectively with ideas or concepts or artwork have emerged to be actually very important. And I think also just thinking about Black culture being quite like an oral culture where, orality is a big part of sort of record keeping and memory making and passing on cultural knowledge. These kind of spaces for gathering where there's no real outcome expected except to share and engage with people have been quite important.
in a kind of research practice, the knowledge at the end is not so closed. You know, it should be contested. Whereas an artwork in an exhibition feels maybe like this is the knowledge we've produced or something.
I think it can feel like that. I don't know if for the artist it feels like that, or I guess if that's the expectation, that can be quite difficult for the artist, because I think it maybe stunts your thinking when you close the research book and you move towards the presentation aspect of it, and expecting the presentation or the final outcome to be a finished work rather than an idea that continues to have its own life. And I think it's hard for audience members too with research-based art, because what you see is an idea that looks like a finished idea presented, but actually it's really important, I think, even as a curator, to mediate that a lot of what you're seeing is a really small fraction of the life of an idea. And you too, as an audience member, are also invited to, I guess, think with the artist, or like diverge your thinking.
May the Lord rise up to greet you, the wind be in your back, our strange land still bear common ground.
Curator Beulah Azugo there, showing me around some of her edition of Tolka Festival of Visual Arts in Galway. The events run until November 23rd. Coming up next in your feeds is our latest Culture File debate, when our crack horde of bug lovers make their case for some lovely unloved invertebrates. Recorded live at the Botanic Gardens last weekend and featuring sound from Lee on the laptops of steel and Chris Watson on the similarly hard-working microphones.